Ave Maria Radio and Renewal Ministries presents Fire on the Earth, a compelling look at the new evangelization through inspiring teachings, interviews, and testimonies.
Welcome, friends. This is Peter Herbeck, your host for beginning another week of Fire on the Earth, a program dedicated to the promotion of Catholic mission and evangelization. Hope you had a wonderful and restful weekend, opportunity to celebrate the Lord's Day with your loved ones. Today and this week, we're blessed. I've got really a very, very special guest and a good friend with us, Bishop Scott McKegg. Bishop Scott McKegg is the Military Ordinariate of Canada, and he's been a longtime friend. He's a board member of Renewal Ministries, and he and I just came back from doing a wonderful retreat for priests and Bishop Ricken in Green Bay, and we had some time, so I want to get him in the studio. Welcome, Bishop Scott.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and you're going to be able to be with us for the rest of the week, which is great. I thought it might be just good to start out with your own story. Tell our listeners a little bit about your own background and how you met the Lord and how you eventually became a priest. It's a very inspiring story.
Yes. Well, I suppose it's a bit unusual for a bishop to talk about his days as a Protestant boy.
Okay. Yeah.
So I had been baptized Presbyterian as an infant, a lot of Anglicanism in the family, but it was not something that was taken seriously. Really wasn't an active disciple in any way, shape, or form. Had vague notions about God, and I think probably assented to that at some level, but was very ignorant about spiritual realities. I probably could not have told you why Jesus was different than Muhammad or Buddha or the 10 gurus of the Sikhs or anything like that. I didn't understand the distinctiveness of the Lord and of his claims. In my late teens, really early 20s, is when I began to have what I would call sort of an existential crisis. I began to ask the big questions like, why is there something rather than nothing? Why does the universe exist at all? Why does it bother to exist? And how can something exist if something didn't make it, if someone didn't make it? What is my life about? Am I just here to collect things and then die? Like, I really was going through that time. I wanted to know. I really was hungry for truth and very interested to find out. And it's a real gift. I think at some point when I was living in the Rockies, I was living in Banff, which is the Canadian Rockies, and I was skiing and short order cooking and up to no good, really. At some point, I dropped in a snowbank somewhere and looking at the heavens and the stars and uttered the first sincere prayer of my life, like, are you there? And if you are there, and if you're real, I want to know you. I want to know you. And it was not something that I was focused on at that time, but it was real, it was sincere, it was heartfelt. And I really believe God answered that prayer. The next year, I went back to college, to university, and started studying. But this issue just kept bubbling up. I wanted to know, like, what's this all about? What's the story here? What does my life mean? And began, I would say, initially as a hunger for truth, a real hunger to know what is true. I remember telling myself at one point, look, if God's just a big Santa Claus in the sky, a big illusion, I don't want anything to do with it. But man, if he's real, I don't want to miss out. This would be the most significant, important thing in existence. And so I got to know. There was a lot of providence involved, people that came into my life, people I'd known earlier in high school who had had significant conversions, found them again, developed relationships. A girl I was dating very seriously was a serious disciple, a serious Catholic. And so they provided for me the sounding board. They provided for me the push and pull to start answering asking the hard questions. I even dropped a few courses in university just to be able to devote some time to do some reading, to struggle with this, to wrestle with this. And, you know, I think it was messier than I sometimes present it, but there was three questions that I was answering, more or less in sequence, but kind of overlapping too. Number one, is there a God? And then number two, is Jesus who he claimed to be? Because I was coming to understand that he was making unique claims. Buddha and Muhammad and so many other religious leaders said, I know the way to the truth. And Jesus is saying, I am the truth. There's something very unique and very distinctive in what he is claiming here. And is that real? Is that true? And then finally, if so, where do I find him? That began me on began quite an adventure in my life. The question of God's existence was resolved fairly quickly. I think that I just intuited and understood that you can't have something come out of nothing. Nothingness can't produce anything. It has no potentiality. It can't. So if we have something, there's got to be something that brought it into existence. There has to be. It's just a logical necessity. And I also sort of had an intuition of what we would now call the teleological argument, that there has to be a purpose. There has to be a meaning behind it. Things don't exist without purpose and without meaning. And I looked at Bertrand Russell, and I looked at a few other things. I did some reading. I was utterly unconvinced by the arguments being presented that we have a meaningless universe and you make up your own meaning and just popped out of being out of nothing. And it didn't follow. It didn't work. And I became more and more convinced of the existence of God. And at some point I crossed that Rubicon and really what had been an intuition, what had been something that I just kind of assented to at some deep level became explicit. God exists. God is real. There is someone who brought the universe into being. There is a plan. There is, he exists, the ground of all being from which we borrow being and existence. And that was a big turning point for me. The next real question is, okay, what about Jesus? He's making some pretty incredible claims, like earth-shattering claims. And that took a little longer, but I was an undergraduate studying history, so I knew how to answer some of the, or where to find answers to some of the questions. And I began to realize fairly soon on that there was about four things that any good historian, whether they believed in his claims or not, are going to agree to. Number one is he existed, and he was a rabbi from first century Judaism. Number two, that he was considered a wonder worker. He was doing stuff nobody had ever seen before. He's considered a miracle worker even by his enemies in the earliest documents we have, even outside of the New Testament. Number three, that he was crucified by Pontius Pilate, put to death. And then number four, that very shortly afterwards, like 3 days later, his apostles are telling people he is risen from the dead, and they're willing to give their lives for the truth of this testimony, that they have seen him. They have seen his glory. They saw him. They touched him. They ate with him. For 40 days he appeared to them, risen from the dead, not as the animation of a corpse, but as the real and living Lord who has taken up his glory again as the second person of the Trinity. I mean, that language is later, but that's the reality they're proclaiming. So those things became established. I began to run into the stories of things like Fatima. Between 75 and 125,000 people witnessing a miracle prophesied months in advance to the day, the hour, the minute, the very place, the miracles of Lourdes, the saints, Padre Pio, and prophecies of great saints. I mean, it just sort of began to grow. The evidence began to grow that this is not some dead guru from 20 centuries ago. This is not a guy who showed up, said some nice things, and disappeared from the scene. The evidence began to mount that, no, he is alive. He is risen. He's on the move. He's alive and active today. I remember reading about the story of Fatima and asking, why is this not on the front page of every newspaper on the planet Earth right now? Like, how is it that this is not the most earth-shattering thing that we've seen and that is changing people's lives and countries? And at that point, I really didn't understand too much of the scriptural record and Paul explaining how we tend to suppress the truth because it's very inconvenient to our fallen nature. But I was gripped by all of this and began to pray, began to look seriously at becoming a disciple of Christ and cross that second Rubicon, if you will, at some point along the way and became a disciple of Jesus. As John Paul II said, I had an encounter. At this point, it was mostly in my head. It was mostly an encounter of conviction. But I made the decision to become a disciple, to pick up my cross, to follow him as Lord and Master of my life.
When did you decide to do it as a Catholic? When did that transition happen?
Yeah, well, that was the next third Rubicon to cross. And I think it was shortly after that. I was already predisposed a bit to Catholicism because some of the miracle stories that I'm encountering are about Eucharistic miracles. They're about Marian apparitions. They're about Catholic saints doing absolutely extraordinary things and prophecy. So I was predisposed. I was open already. But I think the thing that really troubled me is when I made the decision to be a disciple, I began initially to go back to my roots, which were the Presbyterian Church in my hometown. He's the minister there, had buried my mother years before when she passed away from cancer, so I had a connection. And I went in and talked to him, and the biggest thing in my mind was, you know, Reverend, I'm reading in the scriptures, one Lord, one faith, one baptism. But what I'm encountering is something very different. I didn't know if it was true or not, but somebody told me there's over 35,000 different denominations. And I'm like, are you kidding me? How am I supposed to know how and where to live this out? The other thing I'm encountering is I'm realizing very quickly that they're disagreeing about really, really important things. Do you need water baptism to be saved, or is just confessing that Jesus is the Lord is enough? People who are worshiping the Eucharist, is that the body and blood and soul divinity of Jesus Christ, or are they committing idolatry by worshiping a wafer? I'm hearing both. Does the communion of saints represent the family of God who helps us on the way? Are they the great cloud of witnesses leading us and helping us to find God and supporting us in our struggle? Or is this violating Deuteronomy 18 and we're invoking the dead? I just didn't know. And I was hungry to know. I wanted to know. Eventually, at some point, I don't remember now if somebody said this to me or if I intuited it myself. Probably the former rather than the latter. But somebody said, if you look carefully, every one of these denominations or groups is claiming the same thing. We believe what the earliest Christians believe. We believe what the apostles believed and those who followed them. And so that got me looking at, well, what did the earliest Christians believe? And so I started reading the Apostolic Fathers, Ignatius of Antioch and Clement of Rome and Irenaeus of Lyon, Polycarp. And what I discovered was, oh my goodness, the early church was the Catholic Church. It's all there. Apostolic succession, bishops, priests, deacons, the real presence of the Eucharist, communion of saints. And that led me into the church.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, there's more to this story. Let's talk about it tomorrow in particular, how you became a Catholic. Like, when did it happen? And then when you became a priest and a sermon and you're eventually here a bishop. And I'd love for people to hear that part of your whole story too. Can you join us for sure?
Absolutely.
All right, good. God bless you, friends. Hope you can join us.
Each program of Fire on the Earth with Peter Herbeck can be downloaded at AveMariaRadio.net and RenewalMinistries.net. Fire on the Earth is a production of Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'd like to offer you my new booklet, Does God Judge? Wow, what a question, but it's a relevant question. Scripture says we were all appointed to die once and then the judgment. We know for sure each one of us has an appointment in our future, and it takes Scripture, Catechism, and the saints to help us understand the beauty of God's plan and how we can look forward to the judgment as followers of Christ. If you'd like to get a free copy, call 1-800-282-4789 or visit renewalministries.net/FOE.